I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, and you're listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business. My guest today is Catherine Makowski, a fine artist and designer living in Waco, whose handiwork can be seen this weekend at Magnolia's Spring at the Silos event. But before my conversation with her, it's the word on the street. Reagan King is the site manager of Waco Mammoth National Monument, and she's overseen a tremendous economic boon at the five-acre site.
Well, Waco Mammoth National Monument has experienced some pretty phenomenal growth since becoming a national monument. Previously, we were a city park and had about 20,000 guests a year. And this past year, as a national monument, we had over 100,000 guests. So adding that, NPS Arrowhead has done the trick.
The National Monument posted nearly $600,000 in combined revenue last fiscal year, a 64% increase over the year prior and the most profitable one in the site's history. This success has King thinking about next steps for the area.
When a guest comes to Waco Mammoth National Monument, they get to experience a dig site, a real paleontological dig site, and see real mammoth fossils still in the ground. But that's a tiny portion of our 107 acres. We've only excavated 1.5 acres. So we have a big bunch of land that we can develop and potentially find more fossils.
If you've never actually visited the property, there are a couple events happening in the next 2 weekends that offer a great opportunity to explore. One is the Owl Prowl, which will be led by the site's federal rangers and starts at 6:30 p.m. next Saturday, March 24th.
That's a short nighttime trail walk through about a half-mile trail right at dusk so that our guests can hopefully get to see some of our owl residents. We know they live out there, and we're really hoping to get to see them. And then our rangers will help our guests figure out that these animals also lived in the Ice Age and potentially how they may have interacted with our mammoths.
The following Saturday is Mammoths on the March, a free, all-ages event with Easter egg hunts, arts and crafts, and games. You can also buy a wristband for $5 that gives you access to unlimited train rides, the petting zoo, and entrance to the dig site, where you can see the fossils of 24 Columbian mammoths and other mammals from the Pleistocene epoch, estimated to be 80,000 to 65,000 years ago. The Waco Mammoth National Monument is open 7 days a week at 6220 Steinbeck Bend Drive. This week, I wrote an article about Old Waco and New Waco. Now, these designations have nothing to do with age or how long someone's lived here, but refer to a reticence or an acceptance to change, highlighted by issues like street directions and, in this case, mobile vending. It's a response in part to this excellent Waco Trib story from J.B. Smith about squabbling between downtown restaurant owners and the food trucks that take their prime parking. I don't have enough time to dive deep on the topic now, but it's really exploded on Facebook, and a ton of interesting conversation about the kind of city we want Waco to be has taken place in the comments section. Visit wacobusinessnews.com to read my article, Old vs. New, The Fight for a City's Future, and please let me know what you think. Catherine Makowski is a freelance artist who runs Woodhall Studio and whose handiwork you can find this weekend at Magnolia's Spring at the Silos event. Catherine, welcome to Downtown Depot.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here.
So start me off and give me a little history in Waco.
I'm from Waco, actually. So I was born here, went to school here, went to MCC in Baylor, and now I got married here, built a house. So I'm a Wacoan for life now.
You've never left. Have you ever lived outside of Waco?
I lived in Austin for a few months in college because I thought I was going to transfer to UT, but then I didn't. I went to Baylor instead. So,
was there any debate after you graduated high school of leaving Waco?
Oh, for sure. Like, I was definitely one of those teenagers that was like, I need to get out of Waco as soon as possible. But I had to stay here to go to school, get my basics at MCC because that's what I could afford. And then the longer I stayed, the more I was like, wait, I really like being here, and so just ended up staying, and I really like it.
A previous Downtown Depot guest is Mick Burson, who had been in the art program at MCC.
Yeah.
And I've heard really terrific things about what they're doing at McLean.
Yes, yes. Glenn Downing was a professor that we both had, and he's really great. Yeah.
And the Art Center of Waco was there at MCC. Yeah. It's such a beautiful campus.
It really is, yeah. My husband works there, and he just loves it. So.
Oh, what does he do there?
He's an English professor.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
How would you distinguish your time at Baylor and your time at MCC in terms of what you were going through and learning as an artist?
Oh, gosh, that's really interesting. Well, I think at MCC, they kind of focus on your personal vision as an artist, and that's kind of what they're trying to draw out of you, especially what Glenn is doing. He's trying to get you to be really vocal about what you want as an artist and what you think about things. And then when I went to Baylor, it was an interesting switch because then I felt like they pushed more of the technical skills, which is a really helpful thing as well. So I kind of got complementary skill sets from those two different schools.
So kind of different sides of the same coin.
Yeah, for sure.
What would you say now, thinking of your art, is what you want? What do you want as an artist today in 2018?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, so I started freelancing about 2 years ago, and it's kind of been a discernment process. I didn't realize how many different things that I wanted to be doing. And of course, you can't do all those different things. So I feel like I'm finally just getting to a point where I'm narrowing down what I'm interested in, what I want to be doing. So that being said, I've got Woodhull going. It's kind of fun. Paper goods, because I really love paper, the textures and everything like that. So I've got greeting cards and wrapping paper. And then with my personal work, I want to move towards doing like editorial illustration, working for magazines or doing book covers, that kind of thing. So that's where I'm at now. But it's taken me a really long time to figure out that's the direction I want to go in.
What's your dream publication?
Oh, man, that's really tough.
Because a lot of your work, it's very naturalistic, animals, plants.
Yeah.
I mean, is this like, I want to do something for Nat Geo, or are you wanting to do Texas Monthly?
Honestly, I don't have such big end goals at this point. Really, it's more like getting comfortable with the idea of like learning the submissions process and like talking to art directors and that whole process. I feel like I have to learn that first before I have like the end goal.
So things. Even though you are in the nascent stages of figuring this out, my listeners and I don't have any idea how it works. If I wanted to have an illustration of mine in National Geographic, how would that even happen?
Well, I'm also learning that. But one thing I've learned is that you need to be like, well, when you get a magazine, you can flip to the front page and like read all the list of editors. They're all listed there, and you can just kind of cold contact those editors, send them samples of your work, do a cover letter, that kind of thing, and hopefully hear back from them. But it's a lot of cold calling people, basically, to get your work out there. So that's scary.
Is that, I don't know. I think back to before I lived in Waco and started on this entrepreneurial journey when I was living in Austin, I was just writing cover letters every day.
Yeah.
I felt like it was my horcrux, and like part of my soul, like Lord Voldemort, was being sent into the HR inbox of whatever company this might be. And it was just so disillusioning and disappointing to, even when you spend all this time on a beautiful cover letter, you don't hear back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, rejection is a big part of life, but in particular with the arts, you put so much work into this one piece, or it's a commission and the person doesn't like it. How do you deal with that?
Honestly, at some point you have to learn how to turn that off and not take it personally anymore. Going to school to study art is a really good way to do that because you do critiques like every 2 weeks with whatever work that you currently have in progress. So you get really used to people picking apart your work. One thing that you have to get good at as a freelancer, though, is to make sure you know what the client wants up front, because the more information you gather and the more research you do up front, then the less likely it is that you'll have problems down the road and you'll like have someone telling you they're not happy with what you did. But it kind of just comes with the territory, and you have to learn not to take it personally.
Well, you've done some work recently with some local brands, most significantly over in East Waco, the mural on the side of Brotherwell Brewing, which looks fabulous and is so exciting. How did that come about?
Well, I'm actually friends with David and Jacob. We've been friends for a while. And so when they needed some decoration for the brewery, luckily I was there. So I did that for them. I had never done a logo like that, like just reproducing a logo. So that was a new challenge to learn how to do that accurately, but it was really fun.
So describe the process of that project for our listeners.
Okay, so first I primed the wall, of course. So I painted that whole thing by hand, which was a little bit daunting. And then I actually had a huge paper printout of their logo. And then I poked little holes all around the edges of the logo and taped it up on the wall. And then once it was taped up, I rubbed charcoal through all the little holes, essentially making a stencil. So I had all these dots in the outline of their logo. And then I just went and filled it in with paint.
Wow.
So it's a, I mean, it sounds, it's, it is very straightforward, but it is time intensive.
How different was working on a wall than what you typically do on canvas or in Illustrator or else?
Because you're dealing with an old wall that has a lot of holes and pockmarks in it, that was kind of tough because you can't really do straight lines very well. So at some point I just had to like let go and realize that if you step away from it, it looks like there are straight lines, even if you're on a bumpy surface. It was a little bit weird at first, but I feel like I got the hang of it after a while.
What was it like hanging out in East Waco for a few days?
It was fun. I used to work at Lula Jane's, so I love that area of town. And I would just like pop over to get a scone when I took a break from the mural. And it was really nice.
Are you still chummy with Nancy?
Oh, yeah. Love Nancy. She's so fun.
And another Downtown Depot guest, Ellen Mote, had worked at, at Lula Jane's way back in
yes,
the day.
Yes, we worked there around the same time. Yeah.
Wow. What are your thoughts on East Waco, Elm Avenue in particular, but East Waco? And I mean, there's a lot of buzz about East Waco getting hipper. And of mm-hmm. course, you know, with Brotherwell soon to open, and Lula Jane's has done a wonderful job of being the benchmark on that side of town. But what are your thoughts on the development of East Waco and its viability as a commercial space for young people like you?
I think it's really exciting. Obviously, anytime you have renewal in an area of town that's kind of been neglected for a while, you want to make sure that the people who have been living there for a long time don't get pushed out. So that's my only concern. Otherwise, I find it really exciting, and I'm happy that people are going down there and taking it seriously.
You have to ensure that this development happens in East Waco and not mm-hmm. simply to East Waco.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And if they're, if the people who live in East Waco are not a part of this revitalization on Elm, it's not going to be as successful as it could
be. For sure, yeah.
Developers who are trying to do projects on Elm Avenue have to be providing stores and other options
yes.
that people in the neighborhood want.
Yes.
But once again, and I want to make sure that I'm not patronizing, that doesn't mean because it's a lower income neighborhood that we need to have cheapy things.
Right. No.
And
no
that's
way.
Something that I talked with Andrea Bearfield about. Like, people want it. There is money in East Waco. There is more money in East Waco than anyone could ever imagine. And people want to get out and show up, and they want to go to the bar and have fun.
Yeah.
And there's, yeah, that's going to be a balance that
right.
all of us who are excited about East Waco and about Elm Avenue, that we need to strike that balance between providing options that are cool, but that also are accessible for everyone.
For sure. Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
So where do you live in Waco?
I live over in the neighborhood beside the Methodist home, like off of Herring.
Okay.
My husband and I found a little 1-acre lot that had never been developed, so we built a house on it. So it was kind of like dream come true.
Tell me about that project.
My husband really loves going around finding little pockets of Waco that he's never seen before. So he was driving down 15A and saw this cute little house for sale, knocked on the door, and a woman from our church happened to answer. And it was kind of this weird moment, like, wait, why are you knocking on my door? Are you really the one selling this house? So we were going to buy their house, but unfortunately they had to back out a week before closing. But we realized they had an acre lot attached to their property that they didn't use, and so we asked, could we buy that instead? And that worked out for them, and so we bought that lot, built on it. My husband's uncle is a builder in town, and it just all worked out really well.
And how long have you been in that house?
About 2 years now, yeah.
Man, I can't imagine, I don't know how old you are exactly, but I can't imagine there's a ton of other cities where someone who in their 20s can see, hey, there's a lot, let's build a house and
yeah,
let's live there.
I know, that is, yeah, as I get older and, you know, have to support myself, it is for sure a big draw that Waco is so affordable. Cost of living is so low. It's amazing. That's a big plus.
You're hearing from Catherine Makowski, artist in Waco, here on Downtown Depot on 103.3. Take me into that mentality of the artist for a little bit. When you think about Waco's art scene and something that's growing and other artists are coming to Waco, what is it that keeps people here or draws people here?
So, well, cost of living, of course, like we talked about. Another thing that's really exciting about Waco is that because there's so much new growth going on right now, that it feels easy to get on the ground floor of things that are going on. Like, if you move to another city where maybe they have a bit more of an established art scene, it would be really hard to integrate yourself into that, like, as a newbie. Like, if you just moved there, you didn't know people, it would be hard to get people to pay attention to you. But in a place where there's so much new development going on, everyone's looking for help. It really feels like a tight-knit community, and you can really get on board with projects very easily. So that's super exciting.
Are there any communities that you found within your travels or conversations with other friends that Waco could aspire to be in terms of a spot that's receptive to artists and pushing forward that agenda?
I'm sure there are, but I honestly haven't researched a lot about how other cities are doing that, so I can't name any specifics.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing that I know is having groups like Creative Waco,
yeah,
what Fiona Bond is doing. That's so important because as the artist yourself, you really can't spend all day putting out grant submissions.
Absolutely.
And trying to drum up support and get cute flyers made for the art show. Like, you need to be producing, and
right,
others need to come alongside. And it does seem that, like, that's what Creative Waco has done so far. Have you been,
yes,
able to interact with them?
Yes. Their Waco 52 show that they did this past summer, I was involved with that. That was really great. And then, of course, that whole show led to Cultivate 712 happening downtown, which is a really great space. So I have been involved with Creative Waco a little bit, yeah.
What are listeners missing if they've never heard of Cultivate 712?
It's a really cool space. For one thing, you're missing out on Woodhull Studios' physical space in Waco. So you can
fabulous.
Go see my stuff there. They have a really cute retail space. And then in the back, they have a gallery space. Upstairs, they have artist studios and then other event space where they do yoga and that kind of thing. They have music events, dinners, all kinds of really cool stuff in that space. I am a huge fan of what Rebecca is doing.
So Woodhull is your more decorative work. It's when you do cards and gift wrap and stuff,
right,
like that.
Right, yeah. So it's more gifty, consumable things like the gift wrap, gift cards, that kind of thing. So I wanted to have a space where I could do kind of that more commercial, consumable things. And then my own name is reserved for more fine art or for freelance work.
What percentage of your work would you say is under the Woodhull moniker, and how much fine art are you doing? Is there a taste in the public for one or the other?
I'm still definitely in the early phases of promoting Woodhull, so that's probably only about 20% of what I'm doing because I can print a bunch of one card design. I'm not spending a ton of time making individual items to sell. And then the rest of the time is definitely going to my personal work or commissions, that kind of thing.
Like I mentioned before, there's a real beautiful naturalism with what you do. And something that I had spoken with Mick about on this show is creating a unique style that sometimes can kind of hem you in. You know, someone would hire Mick to come and do a wall, but they want him to do the wall that they saw on the other block because,
right,
it was great and they loved it. And when he comes to them with a new design or something a little off kilter, they aren't so happy about that. How do you as an artist wrestle with that dichotomy of, oh, I finally have established a really cool, unique style. Someone can see a Woodhull design and they know that's Catherine Makowski, while also pushing yourself as an artist to create new things and see the world in a way that is unique.
Right. Well, I definitely think it is always, always a good thing to hone what you're doing and come up with a specific style rather than trying to do all styles and do all things for all people, because that can rob your energy very quickly and your time. So I don't think it's a bad thing to turn down jobs because they don't fit a specific style or your client's vision. But it can be tricky, yes, to present the work that you're known for while still experimenting. You have to kind of keep that under wraps or in your sketchbook and develop it kind of furtively while you keep your brand out there for the world to see, you know?
How much So I love that the use of the word furtively there.
Yeah.
So like you're kind of, when you say that, do you mean maybe I am doing something, you know, very public for this client, but at home I'm working in my sketchbook, coming up with new ways to present?
Yeah, for sure. Or just playing around with the types of work that you want to be doing but maybe aren't ready to present. Like, I'm very interested in doing comics in the future, and so I play around that with that in my private work, but that's probably not something I would share because it's just so new and doesn't really fit with the rest of what I'm doing.
Is there a feeling that you get when a piece is finished? You know, I'm finally ready to share this, or you know, hey, this still needs to stay in my sketchbook. No one should see the light of day.
Yeah, and it's kind of an intuition you develop over time to know whether something needs more work or whether it just should be kept to yourself. Yeah.
Is that ever a difficult conversation with yourself?
Sometimes. And sometimes I share stuff. Well, it's very tempting with Instagram to like put stuff out there because you're excited about it and then realize later, like, oh, that was a little bit underdone. Maybe I shouldn't have shared that yet.
And you can always go back and delete it.
You can always delete it. Archive your posts. That's what I do.
What do you do when you're drawing? You listen to music, podcasts, stay in silence, meditate?
All of the above, yeah. I kind of switch between silence, music, and podcasts. Yeah.
You seem like a podcaster.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Do you have some people whose podcasts you listen to religiously?
Yeah, there are a couple. I'm not actually a huge podcast person, okay. So that's interesting. But, yeah, I have a couple I listen to. Some are art themed, like there's one called Creative Pep Talk, which is really fun. Make It and Tell Everybody is another creative one I like. And then I also listen to a podcast called Catholic Stuff You Should Know, and it's just a bunch of priests sitting around drinking bourbon and talking theology, which is really fun. So it kind of gets my mind off of the creative aspect to listen to this other conversation that has nothing to do with what I'm doing.
What are your other resources like Creative Pep Talk? What do you read or listen to, people in your life that help you expand as an artist and hone your craft?
That's a great question. I try to always be reading a novel at any given time just for ideas. I try to learn new skills that don't have anything to do with art. I just started learning the harp because I always wanted to play a musical instrument, so I'm doing that. I like to garden. It's really important to like not get insular and just be paying attention to only creative stuff.
Well, you can see the different creative connections between gardening and harpistry and painting the more that you allow yourself to get in.
For sure, yeah. It brings in ideas that you would have never thought of before if you're just focused on art things forever.
Have you since you started this harp exciting journey that you're on.
Yeah.
Have you sensed anything new in the way that you view the world or you view your art?
It has made me realize that it's okay to backpedal and be bad at something and be uncomfortable with things. Because when I started playing this instrument, I can't read music, nothing like that. I'm not a musical person. So to struggle with something and to feel totally out of my element was really helpful because it made me realize that even with art or with other aspects of life where you feel like you should be comfortable, it's okay to not feel comfortable and it's okay to struggle and screw up because I've already seen myself get so much better at the harp. And when I started, I had no idea what I was doing. So it's been a good reminder in that way.
I am trying to remember who this was. I think it was Guy Raz, who is an NPR fixture, and was saying that when he started doing radio, he would go back and listen to his episodes, and he'd be mortified that he sounded so bad.
Yeah.
But what he realized is that, of course, starting things is hard, and we all are kind of horrible at the beginning, no matter what we're doing. But the fact that you can hear something that you've recorded, or you can see a work that you've done, or you can see the blisters on your fingers from plucking those harp strings, and you get discouraged because it sucked, this is horrible, that's an indicator that you have good taste. And you know that the work that you did is not as good as what you saw at the Met last weekend because you actually went to the Met. So what he says is that many people don't achieve that sort of satisfaction of looking at something that they created and being proud of it until years and years and years of failure are in the books. And you can finally look and say, okay, all that garbage that I did before led me to this piece that I actually am really proud of. And
yeah,
that's a hard thing to stomach because, you know, the life of an artist, you are going to be going through a lot of disappointment with yourself.
Definitely, yeah.
But yeah, eventually you can get to the point where you're excited about what you've done.
Yeah, and just being able to see, like you're saying, the improvement you made, like, it's always a good sign if you look at back at old work and you hate it and you think it's really bad, because that means you've grown. So, yeah, you just have to remember that if you think what you're doing is terrible, you're probably on the right track because you're learning and growing.
This weekend at the Spring at the Silos, you've teamed up with Andy Day, who was a former Downtown Depot cast here with her brand Mary Claret, who makes beautiful linenware. And you guys have gotten together on a pretty fun project.
Yeah. So last fall, Andy approached me to design a scarf because she already does these really cute bandanas, but they didn't have a design on them. So she wanted someone to do the design and asked me. So worked on that together. And then she found a great screen printer in Austin and we got them done. And they're finished as of last week. And I haven't seen one in person, but I'm really excited to.
So where will people be able to pick up these scarves?
So she'll have some at Spring at the Silos and then through her website. And then I'll have some as well through my site and then at Cultivate at my Woodhull booth.
And if people want to find you and track down one of these scarves or see some of the other work that you've been doing, what's the best way to get in contact?
So I love Instagram. On Instagram all the time. So you could see Woodhull stuff at Woodhull Studio. And then my handle for my personal work is k.mikowski. And those will also send you to links to my websites. But I feel like I'm most active on Instagram.
Well, the Spring at the Silos is always a wild time. It'll be even more fun getting to walk through all those booths and see familiar faces and people that I know, some of whom have been gracious enough to stop by the studio and tell all of our listeners about what they're doing. So, Catherine Mikowski, thank you so much for coming on Downtown Depot.
Thanks for having me. This was fun.
Next episode on Downtown Depot will feature a new segment that I'm super excited to share. It's called the Small Business Spotlight, and it's a fun foray into an interesting operation happening outside of downtown Waco. There are so many incredible stories to tell in McLennan County and beyond, and thanks to the folks at American Bank who are sponsoring the segment, I'm able to expand our scope a little bit. So be sure to tune in on Friday, April 6th for the first Small Business Spotlight, and share this episode of Downtown Depot with your friends on Apple Podcasts, NPR One, the brand new KWBU app, or WacoBusinessNews.com. I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, and you've been listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business.